cost the country paying the price. Only 77 NHS hospital trusts in England provided full data, which showed that 59,566 paediatric operations had been cancelled since 2018, meaning the true scale of the clinical disruption is likely even worse. Next week, we'll see 4 days of walkouts by junior doctors after a bank holiday weekend. Hundreds of thousands of appointments and operations could be cancelled, and a row at the Royal College of Nursing over whether to accept the government's pay deal may see nurses strike again. Of the nearly 15,000 children's operations cancelled in 2022, almost 4,000 were due to a lack of beds, a 59% rise on the previous year, according to the data. Meanwhile, 2,894 children's operations were cancelled due to a lack of staff, up 52% on the year before. Meanwhile, 446 were cancelled due to equipment problems, and 1,100 were axed due to a lack of theatre time on the day or because lists were overlooked. Long waits for individual child patients were recorded at Leicester General Hospital and at Hull University Teaching Hospitals, according to the data. Dr. Camilla Kingdon said the figures were very concerning. The decision to cancel operations and procedures is an extremely difficult one for paediatric teams and is devastating for young patients and their families. Parents and carers will go to great lengths to prepare their children, both physically and emotionally, for surgery. The British newspaper The Telegraph has also covered this story. More than 12,000 children are enduring dangerous waits of more than a year for NHS help amid warnings that the lockdown generation is being left behind in efforts to clear NHS backlogs. Those under the age of 18 are now three times as likely as adults to face year-long waits for help from community health services, official figures have shown. Experts said the waits for children in need of speech and language therapy, assistance with motor skills and development difficulties were profoundly concerning and frankly unacceptable. Warning of a disturbing crisis exacerbated by social distancing and repeated lockdowns, they called for urgent action to prioritise the generation growing up in the shadow of the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Camilla Kingdon, president of the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health, said such delays were dangerous, warning that too often they meant children missing the window of treatment with lifelong consequences. It comes as the National Health Service braces for record disruption as junior doctors embark on 4 days of industrial action straight after the Easter bank holiday weekend. The strikes are set to result in hundreds of thousands of appointments and operations being cancelled, on top of the 320,000 already lost to previous NHS walkouts. The National Health Service recently began publishing statistics tracking waiting times in community services, which are not collected in routine data about the size of acute hospital waiting lists. These show that between October and January, the total number of adults on lists had fallen by almost 8%, from 704,000 to 648,000. At the same time, the number of children facing such waits has risen by almost 4%, increasing from 206,504 to 214,028 in 4 months. While 17.5% of adults have been waiting more than 18 weeks, 36.4% of children have faced similar waits, and while 1.8% of adults have waited more than 52 weeks, this goes up to 5.9% among children. On top of this, thousands of children have seen operations cancelled. The trends come amid rising demand from a generation whose formative years and communication skills were blighted by masks, social distancing, and repeated closures of nurseries and schools, fueling developmental delays. The statistics show that over just 4 months, the number of children waiting for occupational therapy, which can help with motor skills and coordination, has risen by more than a fifth, with 22,556 facing such waits. Lists for the more general category of community pediatric services have risen by almost 8%, leaving 64,597 on such lists. Meanwhile, the number of children waiting for speech and language therapy has risen by almost 6%, with 67,774 individuals waiting. They include 2,980 children waiting at least a year for help, 4.4% of all those on such lists. Child health experts called the urgent investment in healthcare services and said children had been deprioritized during the coronavirus pandemic and continue to get a raw deal. The president of the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health, Dr. Camilla Kingdon, said waiting times for children continue to rise even though the adult waiting lists have shrunk. Such long waits for diagnosis, treatment or support are totally unacceptable for any patient, but can be particularly dangerous for children.
Eight-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Iran claims that it is building nuclear fuel cycle facilities primarily to meet future electricity needs while preserving oil and gas for export. On the other hand, Western critics say that Iran's gas reserves are the second largest in the world, and Iran flares enough gas annually to generate electricity equivalent to the output of four Bushehr reactors. Meanwhile, independent experts suggest that, considering the historic difficulties that U.S. policymakers have had with petroleum economics, it seems possible that these assertions are wrong. Because Iran's dependence on export revenue for now suggests that it could need nuclear power as badly as it claims. Recent analyses project that oil exports could go to zero within 12 to 19 years. It therefore seems genuine that Iran needs nuclear power in response to the anticipated export revenue shortfalls. The Islamic Republic of Iran is among the world's top eight countries that possesses a complete nuclear fuel cycle. In the nuclear science and industry, Iranian scientists have made so much progress that they can design modern fuel themselves instead of reverse engineering and using others' designs, which is a great scientific achievement for anyone. Iranian officials believe that in the view of the war in Ukraine and the unprecedented energy crisis that Europe has been facing, if nuclear talks conclude and unilateral and illegal sanctions are lifted, Iran can meet a larger part of Europe's needs. Naturally, Iran is one of the most important countries supplying fuel and energy needed by different countries in the world due to its rich oil and gas resources. Based on its capabilities and capacities, Iran has been able to maintain its presence in the energy market even under the toughest sanctions. To take a closer look at what's actually taking place on the ground, please join us on this edition of Iran Today.
Iran Today.
Iran designated April 9th as the National Nuclear Technology Day back in 2006 when the country enriched uranium on an industrial scale for the first time. Since then, the country has seen steady progress in the sector, from building nuclear power plants to centrifuges and radiopharmaceuticals. This national day is seen as an occasion for the country to reaffirm its right to a peaceful nuclear energy program. Sanctions have been haunting Iran's nuclear industry since the country indigenized the key sector. Tehran calls the sanctions illegal and unfair, for it has insisted since before the conclusion of the 2015 JCPOA, also known as the nuclear deal, or up until now, weapons of mass destruction have no place on the Islamic Republic's agenda, and that its nuclear program is totally civilian.
In my opinion, Iran fulfilled its obligations, reduced its uranium enrichment, and practically turned its Fordow plant into a research center so that Natanz becomes Iran's only enrichment center. Iran did all these measures because it was optimistic about the West. Iran also started reducing its commitments based on the strategic law of the parliament. Iran first increased the enrichment from 3.60% to 20%, restarted the Fordow power plant, and increased its enrichment to 60% by installing new centrifuges. Of course, all this was based on the JCPOA and under the supervision of the agency's inspections.
Under the JCPOA, Iran made a series of commitments, including eliminating its stockpile of medium-enriched uranium, cutting its stockpile of low-enriched uranium by 98%, and reducing the number of its gas centrifuges by about two-thirds. Iran also agreed not to build any new heavy water facilities for an extended period of time. To monitor and verify Iran's compliance with the agreement, the International Atomic Energy Agency was given regular access to all Iranian nuclear facilities. The agreement provided that in return for verifiably abiding by its commitments, Iran will receive relief from the U.S., European Union, and United Nations Security Council nuclear-related sanctions. Accordingly, in May 2019, the IAEA certified that Iran was abiding by the deal's main terms. However, unilateral sanctions reimposed by the United States in 2018 inflicted an estimated $1 trillion worth of damage on Iran's economy, and Tehran expects compensation now. In the history of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, no country other than Iran has ever voluntarily agreed to put such extraordinary restrictions on its nuclear activities, according to an IAEA expert.
Iran has always had full cooperation with the IAEA and allowed for inspection of its nuclear sites, but calls the nuclear agency's maneuvers against Iran destructive. Iranian officials claim that the recent issues and approaches adopted by the IAEA are based on U.S.-Israeli deceptions. Therefore, Tehran has asked the IAEA to stop politicizing issues and focus on the technical aspects in line with the organization's mandate. In the past, they have called on Director General of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, to stop Israeli influence approach on other findings and emphasize that Tehran will never surrender to the political behavior of the UN nuclear watchdog that is affected by Zionist pressures.
The main point is that Israel is not a member of human rights organizations at all. Although it's not a member of the NPT at all, it comments against Iran's peaceful nuclear activities and has no commitment to any international organization. It is said that Israel has between 250 and 400 nuclear warheads. They themselves implicitly confirm this issue, but they have never allowed a single inspector from the Atomic Energy Agency to visit their nuclear arsenals. This is despite the fact that there are hundreds of cameras in Iran and countless inspections are carried out intrusively.
Iran's nuclear program was probed by a record number of international inspections last year as monitors were given broad access to atomic data and facilities. The IAEA conducted more than one inspection a day in 2022 among Iran's 21 declared nuclear facilities. The Vienna-based agency said this month in a restricted report leaked to the Western media. Inspections rose to a record even after Iran's decision to hold back some data and prevent snap visits from February 2021. While IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi said his inspectors were seriously affected by Iran's decision to stop implementation of the 2015 agreement as it responded to Trump's illegal withdrawal, they continued verifying uranium inventories. Since Iran curtailed its sweeping access after the 2018, the IAEA negotiated a series of side agreements to retain agency video footage inside places where inspectors are no longer welcomed. The agency stands ready to tackle the intense verification challenges should the JCPOA be restored, Grossi said. Inspectors continue to gain access to Iran under the IAEA's so-called Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement, which is the standard set of rules adopted by most countries as part of their commitments under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran could restrict monitoring even further by leaving the NPT, as it has repeatedly warned to do so if it's referred back to the United Nations Security Council by any twisted method of justification.
In the JCPOA, they promised that the Arak reactor would be built with Iranian experts under Chinese supervision and with American scientific approval. The United States withdrew from the JCPOA in 2015 and did not fulfill its promises at all. After the withdrawal of the United States, England was supposed to help Iran instead, but this did not happen. China was not satisfied to implement its commitment in this partnership either. Another promise that was made and was not fulfilled is the issue of nuclear cooperation between Iran and the Western countries. They had promised that under the JCPOA, they would help Iran's peaceful nuclear activities. Not only did they not help, but they imposed more sanctions against us. There were other commitments in the field of economic activities and the lifting of sanctions, which, it is clear, were not fulfilled in any way, but more sanctions were imposed against the Iranian nation.
In March 2023, the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency issued a joint statement at the end of the two-day visit of the agency director. They agreed that Iran, on a voluntary basis, will continue to allow the IAE to implement further appropriate verification and monitoring activities. Modalities regarding Iran's new advancements will be agreed between the two sides in the course of a technical meeting, which will take place soon in Tehran.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media.
Here's how it looks on the page. English Al Arabiya reads, Iran minister interested in developing peaceful nuclear energy with Russia, RIA. Iran is ready to expand its cooperation with Russia in the energy sector, including in the development of peaceful nuclear energy. Iranian Economy Minister Ehsan Khanduzi said in an interview with Russia's RIA state news agency. The prospect of cooperation in the field of new energy and renewable energy sources, as well as in the field of other types of energy, including peaceful nuclear energy, certainly causes great interest and motivation for expanding economic relations with Russia, Khanduzi said in remarks published on Tuesday. IFP News says, Iran says ready for nuclear cooperation with Saudi Arabia. The director of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says the country will definitely engage in nuclear cooperation with Saudi Arabia. Mohammad Islami referred to messages Iran has received from the Saudi side that shows Riyadh is pleased with the recent rapprochement with Tehran. He said in order to serve the people of Saudi Arabia, the two countries will work in the field of radio medicine. Islami further spoke of Iran's achievements in nuclear technology, saying the country has made a PET scan machine that is used for diagnosis of cancer. According to Tasnim News, Iran to conduct hot testing of nuclear fuel transportation container. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran unveiled plans for the hot testing of a container used for the transportation of fuel of reactors at the country's Bushehr nuclear power plant. Speaking to reporters on Saturday, Mohammad Islami said the standard and safe container for the transportation of Bushehr nuclear power plant's fuel is being shipped from the southern port city of Bandar Abbas to the Bushehr port and needs to undergo hot testing. Hailing the AEOI's progress in the current Iranian year, which ends on Monday, Islami said that domestic scientists have crowned more than 150 research and technological achievements. He also highlighted the nuclear industry's contribution to the medical sector, noting that over 300 patients have received plasma therapy treatment in the past months. In January, Islami said Iran is ranked among the world's top five countries in the production of radiopharmaceuticals, which are exported to 9 foreign countries. This year will be the 17th year Iran celebrates a national day to mark its achievements in the nuclear industry. Iran in recent years has made great headways in manufacturing a broad range of indigenous equipment in the area of peaceful nuclear technology.
I think the most important achievement of Iran's nuclear industry is self-confidence. It is valuable that some young people around 25 years old together with Iranian scientists around 50 years old got together in a professional collaboration and formed three teams. The first team designing Iran's peaceful nuclear activities, the second team implementing what have been designed, and the third team utilizing the attempts and products of the previous two teams under the supervision of the Atomic Energy Agency. In my opinion, this self-belief and teamwork was a great achievement that showed that the Iranian people can stand on their own feet and achieve this technology. This was while no country was willing to provide nuclear technology to Iran.
A while back, the head of Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, said that homegrown radiopharmaceuticals have been produced for the treatment of cancer and will enter its clinical phase after receiving license from the Ministry of Health and Medical Education. While expounding on programs devised at Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Islami reiterated that the organization will unveil important programs and achievements in the fields of health, agriculture, and radiation of products and food on National Nuclear Technology Day.
In our cement industry, there is a substance called californium-252, which is maybe the size of a peanut. You can put this under the conveyor belt that is producing the product, and then you know what purity it has and what it has without having to take the product to the lab. Well, when you don't have this, you have to transport 10 tons of the product to the laboratory. Well, how are these materials obtained? Of course, through the nuclear industry. In the areas of drilling wells, oils, for example, to be able to identify what oil is like, how much it is, or underground water. All of these require atomic materials.
Moreover, Iran has previously announced the production of several radio medicines, including lutetium-177, to treat a number of difficult-to-treat diseases like cancer. With a half-life of 7 days, Iranian-made LU-177 will have a stronger effect compared to LU-77 and is the indigenized version of the medicine. LU-177 works to destroy cancerous tumors by connecting to the receptors of the tumor and spreading rays in the affected area. This mechanism helps prevent metastasis by disrupting blood circulation around the tumor. It is a type of radionuclide which has drawn attention from global scientists. The new generation LU-177 has low-energy photons and facilitates gamma camera imaging.
The nuclear industry is a must for countries that have a medium size like ours, that is countries with a relatively large population, 80 or 90 million people. Why? Because the nuclear industry is related to the pharmaceuticals, and Iran has at least 1 million patients who are using radiopharmaceuticals. And you should know that Pars Isotope Company, which operates in this field, wrote a letter in which it is stated that the US government says it has not put sanctions on medicine, and sent a letter to the US Treasury Department. The US government first said that the letter was under investigation. Then again, it asked for more information and finally announced that you are affiliated with the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. In fact, they make excuses for not providing service to Iran. They know that by doing this, they are depriving the Iranian nation of radiopharmaceuticals.
Possessing 50 types of radiopharmaceuticals, Iran ranks first in the region and exports its products to other countries. Iran had also earlier produced other radiopharmaceuticals, including samarium-153, phosphorus-32, yttrium-90, and iodine. Referring to the fact that Iran is now among the top and prominent countries in the field of nuclear knowledge, Islami noted that Iran obtained this knowledge by relying on its own human resources.
We definitely need nuclear power. In your electricity basket, you cannot just rely on hydroelectricity. Well, our hydroelectricity supply is about 12% now. At one time, it supplied 18%. As much as the rainfall decreases, it also decreases. Even I want to say that you cannot always rely on electricity that comes from wind and sun. So, you have to produce electricity that is non-polluting, like atomic electricity. A country like Iran, which has enough engineers and has enough education, must have atomic electricity and use it in various fields, such as agriculture and industry.
The enemies did whatever they could to prevent the Islamic Republic from reaching these achievements in the nuclear industry. For instance, some of the sanctions imposed on the Iranian nation include banning the import of 20% purity uranium needed for producing pharmaceuticals used in cancer therapy and treatment of certain diseases. More than 1 million Iranian patients use nuclear medicine annually. This is a very important issue since today many countries are facing serious problems due to lack of nuclear drugs. No country in history has been subjected to such technological and scientific sanctions like Iran.
Ever since Iran's nuclear case was brought up in the world community in 2002, Israel started sabotaging Iran's nuclear facilities. This project of theirs in the fight against Iran's peaceful nuclear activity is not limited to military dimensions only, but also has political and technical dimensions. The Stuxnet virus that happened in the Bushehr power plant could have turned into a global disaster like the Chernobyl. But Israel is not worried at all. It carries out the operation very easily, or the attack that was carried out on the Natanz facilities in June 2021. Israel was indirectly responsible for this, and Iran also announced that this sabotage is related to Israel. In addition to these, we should not forget the assassination of nuclear scientists. The cabinet of the Zionist regime allocates $3 billion of funds for a military attack on Iran's nuclear facilities.
Iran's nuclear field has become such an issue that the state terrorists of America and Israel have made a lot of covert plans and projects to destroy it, one of which was Stuxnet. According to experts, Stuxnet is a powerful computer worm designed by U.S. and Israeli intelligence to disable a key part of the Iranian nuclear program. Targeted at an air-gap facility and unexpectedly spread to the outside computer systems, raising a number of questions about its design and purpose.
As you know, when Ariel Sharon becomes the Prime Minister of Israel, Dagon becomes the head of the Mossad. Dagon's last mission was to stop Iran's nuclear program. Dagon himself, who is now dead, writes in his memoirs and admits that the first action against the Iranian nation was to prepare a list of Iran's nuclear and defense scientists. Then, he says, we came up with a list of 10 people and planned to eliminate them. 2 days before the assassination of Martir Rezainejad, the head of the military intelligence service of the Israeli army says that if a scientist is killed in Iran, he will not shed tears because of it.
In addition, Iranian nuclear scientists have repeatedly fallen victim to the Israeli regime's state terrorism in recent years, while the international community has kept silent. Iran has made it clear that these crimes won't go unpunished. The criminal act of assassinating nuclear scientists is an obvious breach of human rights.
Yes, I know that these assassinations are the work of the Israelis. But the main issue here is that, for example, the Human Rights Organization, Amnesty International, or the United Nations cannot say with certainty that Israel has assassinated the Iranian scientists, because Israel basically adopts a policy of ambiguity. Look at the recent attacks in Damascus. It never accepts responsibility. Whatever crime Israel has committed, not only against Iran, but also the assassination of Iraqi, Egyptian, or Syrian nuclear scientists, Israel never accepts responsibility because it wants to follow its policy of ambiguity. This ambiguity policy is a strategic policy for Israel.
Between 2010 and 2012, four Iranian nuclear scientists, Masoud Ali Mohammadi, Majid Shahriari, Daryush Rezai Nejad, and Mustafa Ahmadi Roshan were assassinated, while another was wounded in an attempted murder. In November 2020, another scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, was assassinated.
If you examine the fake history of the Zionist regime and look at their destructive actions all over the world, you will see that the policy of assassinating scientists is part of Israel's project. Assassination of Egyptian scientists, assassination of Iraqi scientists, assassination of Pakistani scientists, and some other countries and even European. If the Israeli government identifies a scientist who can lead his or her country to nuclear development and technology, it will definitely assassinate them. The Zionist regime has become bolder because the world and international entities have decided to keep silent.
Of course, these terrorist acts did not deal more than a tactical setback to Iran's nuclear ambitions, analysts say. International experts indicate that an efficient system has been established which is able to pursue the envisioned projects without any hindrance. They also suggest that the loss of the scientists who are known in Iran as nuclear martyrs might have prompted students in other fields to switch to nuclear science. Indeed, Iran needs many more scientists to achieve its ultimate goals of building more nuclear reactors, and extensive use of renewable energies are on the agenda of the government. Today, the nuclear economy has great added value and zero pollution, and is considered the cleanest way to produce electricity around the globe, which is why Iranian leaders want to take long strides ahead in nuclear sciences and technology.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Till next time, take care.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, low-income households will spend on average £200 more on bills than last year, the consumer body Which has warned. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Some of the United Kingdom's least well-off households could be left more than £200 worse off on their energy bills this year because of reduced government support, the consumer body Which has warned. Joining calls made by other campaigners, it said the government urgently needed to introduce a social tariff for gas and electricity to protect the most financially vulnerable. Consumers have been spared an increase to their energy costs equivalent to £500 on the typical annual bill originally planned to come in from 1st of April until a government U-turn. However, a separate scheme that provided all households with a £400 discount, giving them £66 or £67 off their energy bills every month from October of 2022 through to March of 2023 inclusive, has just come to an end. Which said that even with the government's decision to keep the energy price guarantee at £2,500 for an average household until July, rather than putting it up to £3,000, millions of low-income consumers would still face higher energy bills this financial year. While analysts have predicted that annual energy bills could typically fall to about £2,000 from this summer, consumers will still be paying almost double what they were paying before the energy crisis began, which predicted that these factors combined will mean the poorest 10% of households in Britain will have to spend an average of £209 more on energy this financial year compared to last year. It said the average low-income consumer used less energy than those on higher incomes, so they would not benefit as much from the anticipated falls in energy prices, but would still feel the full loss of the £400 of additional government support. Higher costs could be particularly difficult to manage for prepayment meter users, many of whom are on low incomes, because unlike direct debit customers, they cannot spread their costs across the whole year and so would see a spike in costs during the cold winter months. Which said ministers had announced the cost of living payments to those on qualifying benefits would continue, but added, this will leave low-income households who are struggling to make ends meet but do not qualify for benefits out in the cold. A properly targeted social tariff, a discounted energy rate for those most in need, was desperately needed, it added. Calls for a social tariff have been growing louder, with Citizens Advice and the consumer champion Martin Lewis among those increasing pressure on the British government over the issue. A recent study suggested such a tariff could save 12 million households on the lowest income an average of £381 a year, and up to £1,500 in some cases. The government has announced a package of cost of living support, including a £900 cash boost for more than 8 million eligible means-tested benefit claimants, including people on universal credit, pension credit and tax credits, to be paid into bank accounts in 3 instalments between this spring and spring of 2024. Site irishnews.com has also covered this story and tells us more. Consumer groups have called for an energy social tariff in the form of cash payments for the poorest households ahead of what they warn could be a decade of high bills. Citizens Advice said payments of up to £1,500 are now an essential long-term solution for millions of fuel-poor households, both now and during what could be a decade of record prices. The call for targeted financial support by next year has the backing of a coalition of consumer and energy bodies, including Martin Lewis and Energy UK, and is part of a new report commissioned by Citizens Advice, following 9 months of consultation with industry and the public. The report recommends cash payments according to individual household need, delivered through a combination of HMRC data on household incomes and energy supplier knowledge of how much electricity and gas is used to show a picture of who needs help and by how much. More than 12 million British households on the lowest income would qualify for support, and the average qualifying household would see their energy bill reduced by £381, with some getting up to £1,500, according to the report's analysis. Currently, households are spending more than twice as much on energy compared with 18 months ago, regardless of whether the government's energy price guarantee remains at £2,500, as is widely expected, rather than rises to the previously announced £3,000 from April. If the energy price guarantee remains at £2,500, 10 million households will face crisis-level energy costs, with more than 10% of their income after housing costs going to energy, a key indicator of fuel poverty, the charity said. If the energy price guarantee increases to £3,000, that figure rises to 12 million households, it warned. People on the lowest income will be hit much harder, with energy make up more than half of their total household income after housing costs in either scenario, up from 34% in 2019. Citizens Advice said it helped 50% more people with energy issues last year than the year before, and more than double that of 2020. Last year, it saw more people who could not afford to top up their prepayment meter than in the previous 10 years combined. The charity warned energy prices are not expected to return to pre-pandemic levels for the next decade. The report also calls for a national programme of loft and cavity wall installation for all households in fuel poverty. Citizens Advice Chief Executive Dame Claire Moriarty said, "Energy affordability is a long-term problem that needs a long-term solution. A social tariff protects millions of people from spending excessive amounts on their energy bills. High energy costs have left too many people choosing between heating and eating. Uncertainty over future high prices only adds to the stress and worry felt in households across the country. This policy helps make energy bills more affordable in the years ahead and supports the shift to warmer, safer homes that are ready for the net zero transition."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Imam Ridha alayhi salam's shrine on the occasion of the beginning of the Iranian New Year 1402, that's March 21st, 2023. The Iranian nation has a strong and stable foundation, and one sign of this is that it has resisted and stood firm against great conspiracies. Another sign is the Iranian nation's great advancements. The enemy do not want these words to be repeated. Mentioning and repeating these things makes the enemy extremely upset, but it is the truth. We have had achievements, which I will briefly mention, that were all accomplished during the sanctions, under the economic siege, and under the most severe, unprecedented economic pressures. This is what the Americans claim themselves. They say the economic pressure that we have put on Iran is unprecedented in history. They are right. Despite all their lies, they are right about this. It is the greatest and most unprecedented economic pressure. The Iranian nation made progress under these conditions. It advanced in science, it advanced in technology, and reached the top ranks of the world in some scientific fields.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Some places it is among the top 5 countries. In other areas, it is among the top 10 countries. In some other places, it is among the top 3 countries out of 200 countries. This is how our scientific and technological advancements are, in nanotechnology, in biotechnology, in different areas. For example, in the field of health, Iran has had more achievements than many of the world's most developed countries. This proved to be true during the coronavirus pandemic. We have succeeded in the nuclear sciences, in aerospace, and in defense. They are all talking about and acknowledging our progress in the field of defense. In order to bring up an excuse to use against Iran, they admit that Iran has progressed in the field of defense and weapons. We have had many achievements in the field of biotechnology. The world praised us. The world scientists praised our scientists. They praised our young scientists. We have made progress in the country's infrastructure, such as roads, railways, dam constructions, and water supplies, such as the Ghadir water supply, which was recently inaugurated. We have made progress in building oil refineries and hospitals, many of which were achieved during the past year. For example, one section of the South Pass refinery complex is completely Iranian-made from start to finish. These advancements took place when? During all these sanctions and economic pressures.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
For American households without children, 14.2% of female single-headed households experience food insecurity, compares to 12.5% in male single-headed households. For households with children in the U.S., 27.8% of female single-headed households experience hunger, compares to 15.9% of male single-headed household. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. A According to Guardian, the end of the expanded benefits comes at a time when U.S. consumer debt has been on the rise, with 20.5 million Americans currently behind on their utility payments and nearly 25 million behind on credit card, auto loan or personal loan payments, the highest number since 2009. Low-wage workers in the U.S. who make less than $20 an hour have experienced drops in wage growth compared with other workers in recent months. Food prices have risen and are expected to continue to rise significantly in 2023 as well. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimated that all food prices will increase by 7.9% in 2023, and they were already 9.5% higher in February 2023 compared with February 2022. With so many Americans receiving SNAP benefits because of low wages, unemployment and underemployment, the sudden end of the emergency allotment has been characterized as a hunger cliff. Ellen Wollinger, SNAP director for the nonprofit Food Research and Action Center, said the cliff is aptly named because this is a very abrupt change in what people are going to have in their food budget, and it's affecting tens of millions of people in the U.S. When the federal government doesn't provide as much support for food, it doesn't mean that hungry people all of a sudden are better off or no longer need assistance or they go away. The hunger is still there. People are still there. The need is there. But the federal government is too abrupt in shifting the burden and cost of dealing with the downstream to states and localities and puts a greater burden on charities. Wollinger noted that the end of emergency allotments leaves low-income families facing difficult choices around food, from foregoing meals and purchasing less to buying cheaper food. She added, "There is a lot of stress. That's why we call it a hunger cliff. It's very precipitous." Food banks have been bracing for a surge in demand as the expanded SNAP benefits expire, with the state agencies directing recipients to food pantries to help cope with the reduction in benefits. Studies have shown that the extra payments worked. The Urban Institute found that the increased SNAP benefits during the COVID-19 pandemic kept 4.2 million Americans out of poverty in the fourth quarter of 2021, reducing poverty by 9.6% and child poverty by 14% in states with emergency allotments. They also have a wider economic benefits. Every $1 invested in SNAP benefits yields between $1.50 and $1.80 in economic activity during economic downturns. A 2022 survey conducted by Propel found that among SNAP recipients, there was a significant level of higher food insecurity in states where emergency allotments were cut off. In a January 2023 survey, there was an increase in the number of SNAP recipients who reported skipping meals, eating less, visiting food pantries, or relying on family or friends for meals compared with December 2022. The end of the emergency SNAP allotments also coincides with a push from Republicans in Congress to cut regular SNAP benefits this year. Despite the majority of Americans having favorable views of the benefits, a January 2023 survey conducted by Purdue University found that 7 out of 10 respondents supported permanent expansions of the SNAP program. But an expansion looks very unlikely in the current Congress. In the meantime, recipients are facing tough choices. Patricia Amaral, 67, of Massachusetts, referring to the COVID emergency benefits, said, "I just received the last one last week. I'm certain it will mean the difference between consuming less fresh produce and less meat, fresh or frozen. According to the Associated Press, America's schools say kids are hungry just as pandemic-era benefit programs have lapsed. There is growing concern about the effects on kids' ability to learn. Congress temporarily made school meals free to all American school kids, but since that ended last fall, the need has only seemed to grow. Soaring food prices are adding strains on families who are seeing reductions in multiple kinds of financial assistance. One federal program that ends this month had given nearly 30 million Americans extra food stamps during the pandemic. School cafeterias typically don't turn away a hungry kid, but debts for unpaid school meals have been rising, showing the level of need and raising questions about how schools will keep feeding everyone without federal money to do it. The neediest kids are eligible for free or reduced price meals as before the pandemic, but qualifying for those benefits requires applications that haven't been necessary for several years. Megan Curran, Policy Director for Columbia University's Center on Poverty and Social Policy, said, "Programs that provide direct food assistance are hugely critical, and we are going to see the effects of not having them over the next couple of months. In the last academic year, with nearly all schools back operating in person, the number of school meals served to students jumped dramatically and was slightly higher than pre-pandemic levels, according to a report from the Food Research and an Action Center. Already, it said the states now are reporting drops in the number of meals served." More than 34 million people, including 9 million children in the United States of America, are food insecure, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, meaning they lack consistent access to enough food for every person in their family to be healthy. Children in such households are more likely to struggle academically and repeat trade levels, among other challenges, according to researchers. For fourth grader Fabian Agur, it's hard to think about math equations when he's sitting in class with a growing stomach. When he arrives in the morning, Fabian eats breakfast served by the school in South Phoenix, but he can get hungry in the classes before lunch. On days he doesn't eat at home first, even the meals offered by the school aren't enough to keep him feeling full.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Donald Trump has become the first among former or sitting American presidents to be criminally prosecuted. With a grim face, Trump turned himself in to the authorities in Manhattan on Tuesday, appearing in the courtroom to hear accusations against him.